Can you imagine what it feels like to be a Canadian soccer player as Peter Pendergast blows the whistle? It's official. Canada 2000 Gold Cup champions. How does that sound?
You're listening to the Northern Football Podcast with Peter Galindo and Thomas Neff.
Yes, it's episode 8 of the Northern Football Podcast. I'm Peter Galindo. He is Thomas Neff. And please, if you haven't yet, subscribe to us, rate us wherever you get your podcasts. It helps out the show, and tell us what you like and don't like about the show. We will try to accommodate you as best as we can. It was quite an eventful weekend, so let's get into it. Why don't we? We'll start first with the Canadian MLS clubs opening their seasons, and two of them actually played against each other, and we were treated to a Canadian classique in every sense of the term, Thomas, with Montreal defeating Toronto FC 4-2. They were fresh off of a massive win over Lyon, and the same lineup actually started this match against Montreal. I know it's only one game, but does this result say more about Montreal as a team, Toronto as a team, or is it just one of those cases where there are so many variables working against both sides that you can't really say for certain for at least another few weeks?
Well, before we get into that, how great is it to have the MLS back? I mean, We've been waiting. It's been a long off season, hasn't it been?
Yes.
And Toronto FC versus Montreal, kind of weird to call them CF Montreal, but that's their name. To me, is one of the best North American rivalries out there, just because what they've had, especially in the MLS Cup playoffs and whatnot. What I would say is, coming off the big win of Toronto FC over Lyon, I'm surprised why Chris Armas didn't alternate his lineup and change up the rotation.
Could he have, though, given all the injuries?
I think so. I think he had three or four pieces that he had in the bench that could have gone in.
Okay.
Although you're right. I mean, no Alejandro Pozuelo, No Jonathan Osorio yet.
Yeah.
The team is very depleted. And the first couple of weeks, Armas has hinted at it in his press conferences that he'll have to play with more or less the same 15 players until then he gets back six or seven key pieces. But going back to your question, does it say more about Toronto or Montreal? I think both. I mean, if you're Toronto, obviously you just came off a huge victory, and you know that the league is important. And the league, the domestic competition, always takes precedent over international competition. That is for sure. But at the same time, there has to be some concern in terms of injuries, because if you are relying, and I'm not saying I think it's great. I'm so happy that finally Toronto FC are playing Canadians. That's been the constant argument that's been happening the last couple of years, is play Canadians. And they're finally doing it, and they're young, and they're good, and that's gonna make a huge impact to our national team. But what I will say is, there's no room for all of them. There's around five or six of them. I don't think Toronto FC are gonna be able to keep all of them. I think some of them might be sold, perhaps overseas, a league like Denmark. Maybe some of them will happen similar what happened to Jay Chapman.
Right.
Maybe go to an MLS club down in the States. So I really think I love the internal competition between these guys, Priso, Schaffelberg, Liam Fraser, Luke Singh, who actually was signed to a first team contract after a great performance down in Florida.
Right.
Montreal, wow. I mean, what a win. Four goals. We had Tristan Demorse on the show, and one of the guys he highlighted was Mason Toy.
Yeah.
Mason Toy, you know, was some would say last year he was the fifth striker, you know, barely played in the beginning, then didn't play. He comes on and does quite well, although it doesn't feel the same. I know we pulled out a poll from the account, which we both retweeted. What is your exciting level following your favorite MLS club, being that the games are going to be played in Florida and Utah? And it doesn't feel quite the same. Obviously, it would be much better if it was at Stade Saputo or BMO Field or BC Place, but this is the circumstances that were dealt with.
Yeah, I'm a little bit surprised at how many people said that they are going to be following religiously. I know it's for almost 60% of respondents saying that they're going to be following religiously despite all of that. A lot of the time, too, fans just want a distraction from the pandemic. Right. And even if the Canadian clubs are going to be playing in the U.S., in some cases in front of no fans, and they're going to be far away from Canada for the next little while, at the very least, they get some sort of activity to look forward to, I suppose. So I get it. I'm maybe just a little bit surprised that nearly 60% were still like, yeah, I'm going to be following as much as I possibly can. But in terms of the game, I mean, agreed with all your points. Toronto FC continuing to play Canadians is one of the reasons why I think Chris Armas was the hire that Ali Curtis and Bill Manning ultimately went with, and they have looked very good early in the season. We'll get more into which Canadians in this game stood out, as well as in Vancouver's game as well. But I kind of agree with you. I think it says a lot about both teams and just the situations they're in, obviously. It's one game, and first games in any league and in sports in general mean very little. But when you consider the absentees for Toronto, Montreal didn't start Kiki Struna or Bjorn Jonsson, two major signings or acquisitions for them. You look at that and think, all right, are they at, you know, optimal speed, optimal 11s? No. But either way, you have to at least credit Montreal for how they approached the game, because I feel they did what Lyon couldn't in those two legs, and that was finish off their chances. Because Montreal, like Lyon was doing, were exploiting open space vacated by Toronto's fullbacks with that high press, right? And when they pressed that left space in behind, Montreal took advantage of that very simply. It was Kyoto, it was Toy, the wingbacks, Broguiar and Kiza were getting involved in that regard. Mihailovic was dropping deep at times to maybe exploit the gaps left by the midfield, pushing up too high, leaving that space for the defense to kind of cover up and down. So kudos to them for doing that. And I feel overall, from a Toronto point of view, that's probably one thing that they're going to have to get right, because part of playing in this sort of energetic, fluid, high-pressing system is getting the positioning right, getting when to press right, where players are going to go, who they're going to mark, things like that. It takes time, right? And the fact that you saw so many gaps kind of shows that not only are they not quite up to speed yet, they're also missing a lot of key players in that system, and they could sign a DP this summer. We'll see. Maybe that could fill in some gaps. But yeah, overall, you can't really, I suppose, take away too much. Maybe looking at the Canadian perspective, Thomas, which player or players impressed you the most for either team?
Well, there's a few, right? Starting with CF Montreal, I'm super happy to see Kamal Miller becoming a starter. Mm-hmm. I was worried that he wouldn't, just considering how deep Montreal are in the position. They decide to go three at the back, and Kamal Miller gets his chance as a left-sided center back, mm-hmm. which is interesting because, I mean, we'll talk about it later on, but Scott Kennedy's back,
right.
Which is great to see. And Joel Waterman getting his chance. I'm quite surprised with Joel Waterman, not to say that he isn't a good player. By all means, he is. Samuel Piet, you know, he is the captain of this team. I mean, he is the franchise player. I mean, pretty much, obviously, he didn't develop in Montreal. Obviously, he left to Europe at a very early age. But at the same time, it's almost like he's been here forever. I mean, he's only been a couple of seasons. But although this loss, I think it does something in Chris Armas's mind. I mean, you have to. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm not saying Luke Singh it doesn't get an opportunity later down the road, but right. I wouldn't be surprised if Eric Zabaleta goes back in.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, at halftime, you saw Nick DeLeon and Justin Morrow go in as substitutes. And that's the thing. With COVID, you have five substitutes, so you're able to see two extra players. But I just don't see that the Canadians will always be highly dependent on, especially when Jonathan Osorio comes back, because he is the top Canadian in that club. So if you have to pick between Priso and Osorio, I think it's Osorio nine times out of ten.
Yeah, I think the only good part from it, at least from that TFC perspective, as well as Montreal and Vancouver, because they're going to be competing in, you would hope, multiple competitions, that the Voyageurs Cup goes on as scheduled and everybody can play games. I don't know, given that they're all in the U.S. But if there are multiple competitions to balance, and in Toronto's case, there will be with the Champions League going forward here. They're going to play Cruz Azul, of course, in the quarterfinals. That does present opportunities for these Canadian players to get the minutes, obviously help out with some rotation, and then capitalize on their opportunities. Because as we saw with Armas and his boss before, Jesse Marsh, they were not afraid to give young players chances in certain positions. So I feel like the opportunities will still be there, but I probably would side with you that once the starters come back, and especially if TFC is struggling, there's going to be pressure to get results because, let's be honest, they're a team that is expected to get results. And if the young players aren't doing their jobs and a more experienced player is more reliable, guess who they're going to choose? Probably the latter. But that being said, I love what Jacob Schaffelberg has done so far to start the season, and not just in this game. He has been incredible at essentially operating as like this free roaming winger type on the left. Like he's exploited spaces between the center backs. Joel Waterman could not handle him at all in this game. And it was kind of interesting that really the few chances TFC got in the first half were through Schaffelberg making those runs and trying to exploit Montreal's lack of pace defensively on that side. Now look, on the other hand, Waterman probably wasn't aided by Broguiar whenever he was caught high up the pitch, but facts are facts, and Schaffelberg did get the better of that individual duel. But agreed with you on Kamal Miller. His display on the left of the three is very encouraging for his Canada stock, obviously. And quite frankly, the fact that he is showing comfort on the ball gives him a bit of a leg up when you look at the other center backs competing for that left-sided spot, right? We're talking Scott Kennedy, we're talking Derek Cornelius, we're talking him, we're talking Frank Stirring, whoever it happens to be. 61 out of 70 passes completed, a lot of progressive passes, and looked pretty comfortable in when he was pressed by Toronto, which I think is a big thing, because a lot of TSC center backs, whether they're good with the ball or not, some of them really can't handle being pressured like that. And Miller took it in stride, which I think is encouraging for him. One last little fact here about the Toronto FC game, just before we maybe move on. It is worth noting, if you are a TFC fan and you want to take a little bit of silver lining from this game, Toronto FC did win the expected goals battle, whether it was total, whether it was non-penalty expected goals, open play expected goals. They more than doubled Montreal in open play expected goals. So at least they were getting the opportunities. It was just a case of they couldn't finish them. It happens. They're missing 11 first-team players. You move on and hope that it corrects itself in the future.
Yeah, look, I would say Quentin Westberg has really won himself the trust and confidence and respect of his teammates. And not to say that Bono, it's all on his fault, all four goals that he allowed. But you would expect Quentin Westberg to come in next game. Or perhaps have a rotate situation when they do face Cruz Azul. Not to say that Patrick Mullins and Peruzza can't cut it per se along with Griffin Dorsey, but man, you need Altidore back and that third DP that's still yet to come. And just before we move on, just to say one last thing. Wilfred Nancy, first game in charge,
yeah,
and comes out with a win. If this is a precedent of what it's going to be for him, I mean, as a rookie coach, then he has a very, very good future as a coach. Yeah. And Zoc Brolgelard, I mean, Rich Larea started as a right back in this game. I mean, it's funny. Rich Larea, number one right back right now in Canada. Elser Johnson, who also played 90 minutes in Nashville's game. Mm-hmm. And Zoc Brolgelard, you have three right backs competing for two spots. And I also recently interviewed Juan Cordova, who says he's really eager to get back in there. And he's going to be playing Copa Sudamericana this year in the group stage. So right. Just love to see the competition amongst Canadians.
Completely nuts how in like 3 years, Canada has an overload of right backs. Because, you know, if rumors are to be believed about Tejan Buchanan, and we'll get into him in a bit, there could be even more right backs competing for that spot, or at least guys who can play there competing for that spot. Yeah, on Montreal, just to wrap it up, the big takeaway from me for them from this game, and I'm sure you'll agree, Thomas, the fact they're sticking to a 3-5-2, I kind of expected them to not deviate away from that, given that was the system of choice under Henri. Nancy was brought in to provide some continuity in that regard, and it looks very solid. The difference is, from last year to this year, they just have way more creative threats, right? I mean, from center back all the way up to the front line, you have guys like Kamal Miller who can progress the ball. You have Kiza and Broguiar who are attacking threats. Mihailovic is that creative threat in the center. Kyoto will drop deep and create a little bit for you and score goals. So when you have guys like that and you have players who can pick a lock across the pitch, that helps you, especially when you are playing a system that needs you to be compact defensively. So that means you can quickly just break out, create a chance, and then if you can finish, that is very ideal. We'll move over to the Vancouver Whitecaps, who won their opening game against the Portland Timbers, somewhat surprisingly, because like Toronto FC, Thomas, they were dealing with a lot of absences. I believe it was 9 first-team players who were unavailable, whether it was injury, suspension, or players just getting their visa. Caio Alexandre and Bruno Gaspar only just got their U.S. visas a few days ago and actually started training for the first time with their new team today, Monday. So maybe it will be a little while until we see them up to speed there. But from the Whitecaps' perspective, clearly massive because you get the 1-0 win in your first game against a presumptive favorite in the Western Conference, albeit coming off a Champions League game. They started the exact same lineup, did Portland. But what was your big takeaway from a Whitecaps' point of view seeing this win?
Well, it looks like Marta Santos has been doing his scouting, hasn't he? Really great on a Vancouver perspective. Maxime Crépeau, Canada's number 2 at the moment, getting the clean sheet. Christian Gutierrez, Montreal-born, Chilean-raised. With Ali Adnan currently not present, you'd have to think this is a chance for him not only to be the club's number 1, but maybe really have a crack at the national team. Lucas Cavallini, I've said this before, back in his Puebla days, to me, he was at the prime of his career. That's when clubs like America, Cruz Azul, Monterrey, the top 6 really in Mexico really wanted him. I know he had a drop in terms of quality at the beginning of the year. He's really coming back to his level. If he can really, I'm honestly, not just because of the amount of money that he's on, but Lucas Cavallini can really be like the top striker in the MLS if he wants to, of course. Of course, he's not in one of the best teams, of course, but at the end of the day, I think he has enough quality around him, perhaps, maybe lacking a player or two, but he has enough that maybe it can help him be one of the best. And not just him, from a Canadian perspective, Russell Tiber, maybe it's a chance for him to really impress. I know. Maybe it's a chance for him to impress.
At the end of the day, I agree with you.
What was the last time we saw this many Canadians on MLS clubs, on Canadian MLS clubs and American MLS clubs getting this many opportunities? But again, you know, he's being deployed as a winger, not really as a central midfielder. So I don't know if there's room for him in with the Canadian national team in that position. Regardless, for me, what did you think of the two Colombians?
Both of them had flashes. Christian Dahomey started the game very, very brightly. I think he was easily the most energetic of the trio of attackers with Caicedo himself and Cavallini. Although Cavallini was getting involved quite a bit, which is a far cry to last year when he was almost on an island. I just feel like, much like with Montreal and Toronto, you can't properly judge this yet because I think their performances were almost a microcosm of what Vancouver was dealing with. Because almost, I would say at least a third of their presumptive starters were missing. Because I think Caio Alexandre coming in instantly transforms the team's fluidity going forward. And that was one of the problems that the Colombians, as well as Cavallini, had, was that they just weren't getting a lot of support on the counter. And because Portland had so many players back protecting against those counters, there was really no quality chance to come from in open play or on those counterattacks. Literally the only best chances, and obviously the goal coming from one, were on set pieces. And credit the Whitecaps for capitalizing, credit Cavallini for getting that decisive goal. But the Colombians, for me, it's going to take another couple of games at least. Dahomey is maybe a little more solidified just because he's been there for a year and he has played with Cavallini before. But Caicedo had some flashes. You hope to see more. I maybe want to see him play on the left and see Vancouver go to just a straight 4-3-3. I feel those three up front together, where both Dahomey and Caicedo are tracking back and then going forward, combining with the fullbacks. Whether it's Gutierrez or Adnan or Gaspar or Nowinski, whoever it is, could be very, very good. I'm going to flip it over to you a little bit here, Thomas, because you talked about a couple of them already, but if you had to pick just one, which Canadian for the Whitecaps impressed you the most?
Well, for me, it's Crépeau. I mean, he was nominated for 2019 MLS Goalkeeper of the Year. Didn't ultimately get it, but for me, I thought he deserved, considering the amount of saves he got every game, being on the bottom team. I know maybe for you, it's going to be Michael Baldissimo. I know you rate him very, very highly. Look, I mean, the Whitecaps had 4 less players on the bench than the Portland Timbers. Yes. I mean, that has to say a lot.
Yeah. And they were all youngsters, you know, and I found it a little bit surprising that some of those youngsters didn't check into the game earlier, given that some of those guys were probably tired. And when you're sitting back like that and you're bunkered in the last 15, 20 minutes of a game, you kind of need fresh legs out there to get the counterattacks going. So, you know, the fact Raposo didn't come in sooner, the fact you didn't give maybe even one of the defenders, you know, like Facchinieri, an opportunity, a little bit of a shock to me in that regard. I'm going to surprise you in a way. I'm going to go with Gutierrez. I think he was the most impressive Canadian eligible, I suppose, player.
He was flanking that left side the whole night.
He was terrific. For me, he was the man of the match. Defensively, very sturdy, more defensively assertive than Ali Adnan is. And if he can show a little bit more going forward, like if he's given more creative freedom, I can understand why he wasn't in this game, given the absentees and the task at hand of just kind of getting a result. But if he gets more involved in the buildup as the year goes on here, I could see the Whitecaps being very open to starting to move Ali Adnan in the summertime if the interest is there. I believe he's now a TAM player, or at least can be a TAM player, which maybe restricts the need to sell him ASAP. But if you've got Gutierrez there on a smaller ticket who's Canadian, playing well at left back, do you really need Adnan from now on?
He doesn't have you don't have to use an international spot for him.
Exactly. Frankly, that makes a lot of sense, but it's up to Gutierrez to capitalize. Great start from him for the season, and the few times he checked in last year looked very, very good as well. So this is just a continuation of that. I'm expecting more of the same. If he can just get involved more in the final third, or he's allowed to get involved more in the final third, I think the sky is totally the limit for him. I understand it is one game, Thomas, but do you feel more optimistic about the Whitecaps this year compared to the first couple of years under Dos Santos?
Well, you can definitely tell they've been practicing set pieces. I mean, that's without going. I don't know about you, but the new formation that they've tried, as the definition of insanity is try something the same time and expect different results.
Right.
I mean, that's the definition of insanity. And it looks like Mark Dos Santos is thin in terms of, it looks like to me at least, that this is his last year to really prove himself at the MLS level. And he has the support from Alex Schuster and the ownership group. But let's be honest. I mean, patience is a virtue. I mean, you have it for a certain amount of time, and looks like, look, if they can play this way every single week, I mean, I'm not gonna say that the Whitecaps are gonna be a contending team, but you know, they could get we could be talking wild card spot.
Yeah, they can get in the playoffs. I agree with that. I think that should be the goal this year. I mean, heck, they came close last year in the expanded format. I understand pretty much every team made it, but when everybody was fit and together and Dos Santos nailed a system together and didn't change it every other game, you saw them start to produce results. And I think the biggest two takeaways you can take from a Whitecaps perspective is, number one, they didn't concede 20-plus shots in this game like they did pretty much every other week last year, and in 2019 as well. They only conceded, 7 shots to Portland, which I think is a job well done for sure. They conceded 2 big chances in that game. One was towards the end of the first half, and then the second one was pretty much right at the end of the game when Vancouver had the lead. So that's huge. The only thing is, you hope that with Alexandre coming in, that the attacking buildup just becomes a little sharper, more incisive, more certain, because there were times when the Whitecaps were just a little bit indecisive on the ball and were just moving it way too slowly. And like I said, just not enough players on the counter for support. Maybe the shackles are loosened as more players come back and we start to see a more free-flowing attack. But when the way they were pressing and the way that they were creating chances in the opening 15, 20 minutes, maybe it's a sign of things to come from now on. As we dive into Canadians abroad, we're going to stick to MLS temporarily. Because Thomas, I know you wanted to discuss Dane St. Clair, who saved a penalty against the Seattle Sounders, albeit Minnesota United did lose 4-0 in the end. But look, last year he had a terrific season, clearly, and now has national team consideration, obviously. Depending on how this season goes for him, can he challenge not only for the number 2 spot, but for the number 1 job?
I think the number one job is too steep. I mean, we were talking about it off the record one time. No wonder how many blunders Milan Borjan makes. It seems like he is the number one and clear choice for John Herdman, isn't he? Mm-hmm. But yes, for the number two job, absolutely. He did save a penalty, as you mentioned. But realistically, I don't know. I would say you're playing against Seattle, one of the best MLS clubs, on the road. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of it quite yet. But Dane Sinclair, for me, he has the potential to not only be an MLS player, but maybe down the road. I mean, look, there's not that many Canadians that come through the NCAA system. And usually when you see one or two, as we have with Tejan Buchanan, who we'll talk about in a sec, and Elser Johnson, they produce such quality that if I'm John Herdman, I would give him a shot. I mean, for sure. I mean, against Aruba, because against Aruba, it's not that you don't have anything to lose, but I would expect a similar result than the 11-0 win against Caminans. He is eligible for Trinidad and Tobago.
Yes, he
and
is.
I'm not saying he probably won't, defect or try. But, I mean, if you're in his position, you're Canada's number three, and you get a phone call from Trinidad and Tobago head coach saying, hey, Gold Cup's coming around, you're my number one.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to say it's not tempting, you know, in his end, but like you say, it's an opportunity to cap tie players.
Exactly. And that's why I was shocked that Gutierrez didn't get a chance in either of those games, especially the Cayman Islands match where Davies played the full 90, I believe, in both games. So why are you keeping him out there for an 11-0 and just throw on Guti, give Davies even like 5-10 minutes of rest, just give him a cap, right? And just get that off the table. It's like, all right, Guti, you're ours. And that's it, right? And then we don't have to have this conversation going forward. But
still unlikely that Guti gets a Chile call-up. But yeah, I agree. That was a chance to captain him, yeah. and they did.
But for St. Clair, I mean, he just to go over the numbers from last year, big reason why Minnesota did as well as they did, clearly, he ranked fifth in MLS among starting goalkeepers in post-shot expected goals plus minus. So basically, did he save more goals than he was expected to save? And he did. He saved 2.2 more goals that he was basically more than he was expected to. And that ranked fifth in the league. The only thing that maybe goes against him that Kripo has, St. Clair, when it comes to his distribution, is not the best. I personally think that if you want to be a team that builds from the back, having a goalkeeper who's comfortable in possession helps you. So maybe that's the one knock on St. Clair that gives Kripo the advantage, but certainly shot stopper for shot stopper, they're both right there. So this is going to be a really fascinating battle to watch. And Thomas, you mentioned it as well earlier in the show. Has there ever been a time where this many Canadians, both for American teams and Canadian teams, are starting? Because Tejan Buchanan, he started and played with New England. Alistair Johnston obviously got 90 minutes for Nashville, as you talked about. Tyler Pascher assisting a goal in his Houston Dynamo debut, coming from the USL, I believe it was with Indy, and then right away starting off life in Houston on a high note. What does this say about, I suppose, Canada's player pool and just in general, the fact that more Canadians are just getting chances now?
Well, Elser Johnston is already in the national team fold behind Richard Liria. Tejan Buchanan is an interesting one because last year he did play for New England, was as a right back for the U23 tournament in the Olympic qualifying. He played as a forward. Clearly, New England took notice of that and decided to play him this game as a winger. Although in the case for Tyler Pascher, yes, he's had two amazing seasons in the USL, and I'm super happy to see him. Even though he is over 25 years old, unlike Johnston and Buchanan and St. Clair, who are very young. But in the case of Pascher, I don't know. Depending, unless he had an unbelievable season that you absolutely could not ignore, something along the lines of 10 goals, 10 assists. I mean, that would do it. But even then, because let's not forget that Tesh Akindele had a couple seasons where he had 8 or 9 goals for Orlando City, and he was still not called up for the national team. So I would say Tyler Pascher, in terms of the depth chart, I would say he's behind Tesh Akindele, or maybe Raheem Edwards. You know, I think he would be along those lines. And we haven't even talked about if Ayo Akinola commits to Canada, because I think if Ayo Akinola commits to Canada, I think he will skip the line per se. and be one of the guys that will be given priority, considering you have to captain him, and also considering that the U.S. Wouldn't say rate him highly, but he is very much in their plans. Look for Dane Sinclair. What I would say is, I know a lot of people on Twitter and some listeners of this podcast have mentioned that they would have liked Sinclair to play the game, the second game against Cayman Islands, as opposed to Crepeau. I don't know. I would say Crepeau deserved the chance, considering he had five or six previous caps. But again, I mean, James Pantemis isn't looking like he's going to be the number one this year with Montreal. So Sinclair, after Milan Borjan retires, because he will be retiring, let's remind people, he will be retiring after 2023, he said in an interview in a Serbian newspaper. Then I think it's going to be between Crepeau, Sinclair, and Pantemis for the number one job post 2022, and it's going to be exciting, because who will be the number one goalkeeper in the World Cup 2026 in home soil?
Yeah, exactly, and this is what just adds to Herdman's headache, quite frankly. If we look at maybe some good news, bad news situation here, we'll start with some good news. Over in Europe, Jonathan David returned to the pitch and looked pretty good for Lille in his return off the bench against Montpellier. He was slated to come back sooner than expected from when his injury to his ankle was diagnosed, but coming back this soon raised a few eyebrows, certainly from me when I saw him on the bench, but then I saw him play. And, you know, I was looking very closely to see, you know, how hard would he sprint? Would he be favoring his ankle after a run? Now, granted, he could have had some sort of anesthetic in there. He could have been injected with something. I don't know. But in terms of what I saw, David looked pretty much normal in his return. I mean, there was no change in his intensity with his pressing, unlike after he suffered the injury against PSG. So that's the good news, I suppose. Does this, for you, Thomas, change your outlook for him for the rest of the season, as well as for these qualifiers coming up, now that you've seen him return in 20 or so minutes?
Yeah, he came back extremely quickly. I mean, it almost feels like just 2 weeks ago he was injured, taking off the game against PSG after he had scored the goal. Mm-hmm. And then the following day, Lille had put out a press release saying that he was going to be out for several weeks.
Correct.
But wow, I mean, he came back straight in the bench, comes off as a substitute in the second half, and seems to play normal up to what he was playing before. Extremely surprised by the decision. But again, I mean, great to have him. I mean, for me, he is our number one forward coming in, considering the league that he is at. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Lucas Cavallini is in MLS with the Whitecaps, and Kyle Aaron's in Turkey with Besiktas. But in terms of age, I mean, Laren and Cavallini are over 25 years old. David is the youngest player, not only the youngest player, but the one with the highest projection. And he's at a better club and a better league. So taking all that into consideration, if he's healthy and he can travel, that's the big one. If he can travel, if Lil give him permission to travel, he is my number one forward for these qualifiers.
Well, there you go. We're in agreement. Maybe looking at some bad news. Scott Kennedy, he came off injured in Young Regensburg's loss to Heidenheim over the weekend, came off just before the end of the first half. Look, considering he just recovered from an injury, which might have actually kept him out of this national team camp in March, and played well after coming back from the injury, does this change anything regarding his stock? You had mentioned last week that for you, he's a starter. So depending on the severity of the injury, do you think this changes anything, or do you feel like when he comes back, he's still a starter for me?
All right. Regarding his talk, I don't think so. No, I think when he made that move to the second Bundesliga, I mean, that's true. I mean, what a change that was from the second division of Austria. So I don't think his stock changes much, like his value. But I think his position in Canada does change. I certainly do. And the reason for that being is that just how many games consistently will he have as a starter, playing 90 minutes in, 90 minutes out, week in, week out? Not only week in, week out, but before the June window, I mean, how many games, how many weeks will he will he play consistently? But at the same time, it's also interesting because John Herdman, you can watch Kamal Miller play because TSN broadcasts the games and because he's right there in Montreal. John Herdman can literally take a flight to Montreal, obviously taking all the precautions, but he can, or he could call, you know, someone in Montreal and watch him and scout him there. I'm not sure how often he watches the games in the second Bundesliga, but I definitely think that there's going to be interesting competition because Scott Kennedy, because I think the second Bundesliga is higher than the MLS. I don't know if you agree or not, but yeah, I mean, fans, watch out because maybe there could be an interview coming with Scott Kennedy in the next couple of weeks.
Yes, indeed. Love the teaser there. Yeah, and for me too, I don't think it really changes much. It doesn't look like the injury's too serious. I mean, knock on wood here. So if he does come back soon, shouldn't impact things. And like I said on Twitter, like I said on the show last week, if Canada wants to play in a high line, Scott Kennedy would be a leading candidate to do so. The only reason you maybe wouldn't start him over, say, a Kamal Miller or Derek Cornelius or whoever happens to start on that left side, technically speaking, on the ball specifically, not as solid as those other options. But if he's playing and you want someone who's going to be defensively sturdy and astute in a high line, he's one of the leading candidates for sure. So let's hope it's not too serious from that perspective, because that would be really detrimental given that he's very, very close to getting a call up with the national team. Maybe in June, we shall see.
Yeah. Peter, before we close it out, I want to ask, obviously, we're not rich in center back depth per se, but is the 4-3-3 still the best formation for Canada? Or could you see maybe a guy like Henry, Kamal Miller, and Kennedy, could you put them all together as part of a back three? Just because you have the two fullback options with maybe Guti or Adekubi and and Larea, Johnston, CBG, like you have the fullbacks that are excellent. So
yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, and you have fullbacks who can play as wingbacks, right? You throw in Alphonso Davies in there too. Look, a lot of people have asked me this in terms of whether it would behoove Canada to play in a back three. And to that, I say I am all for it. If you practice with the system, if there are players at club level who are used to playing in that, Doniel Henry is, we've seen Kamal Miller now is, and then pretty soon Joel Waterman. I mean, well, he already is, you would imagine, because he played there with Calgary, he played there with now Montreal. I feel like it wouldn't hurt at all, and it would actually help mask a lot of your weaknesses at center back, whether that's a lack of pace, whether that's getting burned in defensive transition because you only have two center backs covering all that space, even with the extra midfielder sitting back. If you have fullbacks and wingbacks pushing high up, that can help you as well because you just have the extra man back there to allow those wingbacks to get forward. So I would not be opposed to it at all. I could see it. The fact that Canada in these qualifiers, this is specifically why I asked John Herdman this question, is the 3-4-3 variation that we saw in those qualifiers, is it something that we're going to see going forward? And, you know, Herdman seemed to be pretty open to the idea. He never committed to it, obviously. But the fact that we saw it, and the fact that Davies did see time at wingback, the fact that there are a lot of options who can play in that back three, I say, why the hell not? Especially if you're going up against more marquee opponents who are maybe expected to dominate possession. That could be a great way to hit them on the counter because Canada, with the options they have, can be devastating in open space on the break.
Yeah, yeah. And Theo Cormann, who still hasn't made his Premier League debut. I mean, the coach hasn't brought him on as a sub. Liam Miller continues to be a regular for Charlton Athletic. So great to see. He was actually on the poster for the starting lineup. So there you go.
He'll be a regular there till the end of the season. Corbianu, it is disappointing. I mean, Wolves, they've had so many attacking problems this year, whether it's injuries or just a lack of production. The fact he still hasn't gotten in there is a bit weird to me. But, I mean, look, the fact he's getting considered still, I guess, is a good sign, and he's still 18 years old.
Canadian soccer fans are just praying that someone gets injured.
Yes, exactly. Which is maybe not the right energy we need to have. But either way, we'll see what happens. All right, we will close out the show with a recap of the Canadian women's national team's friendly victories over England and Wales, specifically the former, as we discussed the Wales win last week, but a massive victory over England earlier in the week, Thomas.
Very big. And to help us chat with that, we welcome in Sandra Persina, who covers the women's national team and Canadian soccer as a whole. She's also a sports anchor for 660 News in Calgary. Sandra, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. Much appreciated.
So Peter and I discussed the Wales victory last week, but defeating England is clearly a huge result. First top 10 win since 2019.
Yeah, and that's the way that I look at it. And I remember when I saw that starting lineup last week, and I didn't see Christine Sinclair's name. And then you think of all the, you just look back and it's been so long, and Canada has struggled, like you said, against these tier one teams. That's the quote that the team uses. And I wasn't really sure what to expect, but they really found some momentum. I saw it from that win versus Wales. They were able to focus on the things that they knew they could do. And what I really liked is that they finally made an opponent pay for their mistakes. And that's something, if you think back to the She Believes Cup, when they were playing the Americans looked pretty rusty in that first game, and Canada just couldn't take advantage of the mistakes the Americans were making, make them pay. So they made England pay on both of those errors, especially the last one was pretty egregious by the goalkeeper there. So I thought it was a fantastic performance. So happy for Evelyn Vienne. She should have been called to this team years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's not really like an I told you so type moment, but sorry, I told you so. She's pretty good.
Yeah, we're going to get into her in a little bit here, because I feel like she's probably one of the stars of both of the victories. But maybe in terms of looking at this result as a whole, just building towards the Olympics, because Bev Priestman has had so few games with the group, specifically for a younger group or a squad that doesn't have all the veterans there, you know, and I know it's kind of a cliche question, but how massive is that for the confidence specifically of the younger players who participated in the game?
And it's funny you say that, Peter, because I was actually thinking about this the other day. Jessie Fleming is still technically considered young, mm-hmm. and yet she's already been with the team for 5+ years. So they have these young veterans. And talking to Shalina Zdorsky after the game versus England after the win there, and she even said herself, she's like, I'm not young, I'm not old, I'm kind of in the middle. And they have a lot of players like that. They have a lot of players from this 2014 group that I call the U20s. And that would be Ashley Lawrence, Kadisha Buchanan. Shalina Zdorsky falls under that group for me, as well as, unfortunately, she's injured right now, but Kaylin Sheridan. So they're this crux of that team that I think that's really important, that these even younger players are going to feed off of. So they've already had a lot of experience. Many of them have already played in a couple of World Cups. Some of them already have Olympic medals. So they just have this great foundation and this basis that they can build on. And then you still throw in somebody like a Desi Scott, who can still play at a really high level and play some very important minutes for this team. Oh my goodness, I forgot about Kadisha Buchanan. I don't think I even mentioned her. It's been so strange. Yeah, I want to throw her in the mix, because right. she's part of that crux, that group that needs to help these younger players, or not necessarily younger, but somebody like Vanessa Gill, who isn't younger by age, but when you look at experience, she is a little bit younger in that experience essence. So she has somebody like Shalina Zdorsky to look at and you know, create this formidable partnership on that back line if and when, you know, Kadisha can return to the team when it's safe to do so, depending on what happens going forward here with, unfortunately, with COVID. So I just think they're very, very lucky that a lot of these players were brought into this team a number of years ago to now create the veteran presence on this team for the younger players.
And speaking about Jessie Fleming, you know, feels like she's been around forever. She's 23 years old. She has 82 caps. Crazy. Like you would think she, because she debuted as a teenager. Looking ahead, which players do you think significantly bolster their stock for the Olympic tournament that maybe weren't considered before for Bev Priestman?
Yeah, I don't envy Bev Priestman at all, to be honest with you, because I look at the performance these past, so essentially 5 games now, you look at She Believes, you look at these 2 games, you have to think, will somebody like Sophie Schmidt make this team? Diana Matheson, she's injured. Unfortunately, that's she's done so much for country in terms of soccer. I can't see Coach Bev taking her over, say, somebody like Evelyn Vienne. Someone interesting to me is Sarah Stratagakis. She has this very unique skill set that I think I think going forward this team will need those sort of versatile players. And Vanessa Gilles, I'm just so impressed with her. It's really interesting to think that because she's made her presence felt, this could actually improve the team because Ashley Lawrence will now have an opportunity perhaps to play in the middle a little bit more rather than being relied on as a fullback. And listen, she's a great, great fullback. She's fantastic. I remember way back when John Herdman would say he wants his fullbacks, when he was coaching the women's team, that is, he would say he wants his fullbacks to be modern fullbacks. And I think Ashley Lawrence is a perfect depiction of that. But I think to get her at her best, she can play in the middle. So with Vanessa Gilles coming onto the scene, you have Shalina Zdorsky, Vanessa Gilles, as well as Kadisha Buchanan as options as center backs. Quinn has essentially moved into the middle. They can be used as a center back in a pinch, but they've really, really established that center presence. So I think they're an absolute shoo-in for the Olympics. What a shame that Adriana Leon got injured, because I think that might hurt her chances just given the presence that Evelyn Vienne has made on this team. She's already made a significant impact and only played, what, 4 or 5 games now? So that to me is huge. Michelle Prince, I think you'll always have her. Deanne Rose, just because they're so fast. In terms of a leadership role, Janine Becky is taking on a bigger leadership role. And Jessie Fleming, you talked about her, young in age, but not young in experience. I would love to see her get more minutes with Chelsea. I think that might be holding her back just a little bit right now, just not getting those pro minutes. But listen, I think when you look at the Olympics as a whole, they're a much different tournament than the World Cup. And I think for Canada to have fewer opponents on a road to a podium finish actually works in Canada's favor.
It is true. And you bring up Evelyn Vienne again, and this is a perfect transition. She obviously filled in seamlessly for Christine Sinclair and has had a productive 12 months or so at club level. That loan at Paris was ridiculous. She was scoring for fun over there on a mid-table team in France. But with her, Chloe Lacasse, and others making waves, do you think it might be time to have the conversation for Sinclair to maybe take on more of a super sub role at the Olympics with these younger players showing that they can be capable finishers? I mean, Abby Wambach did the same thing towards the end of her career, if we want to kind of tie the two together.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Peter. And I think Christine, just the way that we know she is, she will always put the team first. She will never put herself first. I don't want to compare her to like a Carly Lloyd, who like a month ago, she got so upset when a journalist didn't include her in one of the Americans or something to watch. And it's just like, you need to adapt to your role. It's not a knock on you. Your hardware and your accomplishments will never be expunged. What you have done, and Christine is a humble leader, she's a humble speaker, fierce competitor. I have no issue at all thinking that she will be able to take a little bit of a back seat, because she will always put the team ahead of herself. And I think what we saw through, so she got hurt one in the first maybe 20-ish minutes there versus Wales. Mm-hmm. I thought the team really responded well, because I actually thought while she was on the pitch, the team was trying to do that thing where give the ball to Christine. But once she came off the pitch, they got a little bit more creative and they decided, okay, we can't just rely on one player. We got to spread this talent around the field. So I think she will absolutely be okay with it and provide the leadership that she needs, whether it be on the bench or on the field. But I just think we know the kind of person that she is, and I think she'll be okay with it.
Going into the Olympics, because that is what the Canadian team is looking forward to, what are your remaining questions or uncertainties? Maybe you mentioned before, it's a good problem to have, having so many names and only 18 players to pick from.
Janine Becky is an interesting player to me because she plays so well at a club level, but I don't know if she has nerves or something when it comes to playing internationally. It's like she teases us with how good she can be, and she needs to be able to hit another level. So I would love for her to get to that level. And very similarly said to Jessie Fleming, I touched on it before. I think she needs to get more minutes because she needs to patrol that midfield a little bit stronger. My biggest question actually going into the Olympics is, what do you do with that back line? Who will be your two starting center backs? Shalina Zdorsky obviously is a shoo-in, just given what she's done. She's really reliable. She's a captain with the Spurs. She knows how to play big minutes. She's a leader. She commands the back line. But who's going to be her partner? Kadisha Buchanan, it's just such a shame she hasn't been able to attend the last few camps. And she continues to be a great player in France. But you can't downplay the impact that Vanessa Gilles has made on this team, particularly if you think back to that debut game versus the Americans. I remember I watched the American broadcast on Fox Sports. They had no clue who she was. And they were like, okay, she's pretty good. It's like, yeah, she's pretty good. So speaking of another player who's played really well in France, there's another example of a player that she takes care of business. And what I really like about Vanessa is she's smart. She's fearless. And that's something that Coach Bev has talked about, is being fearless and showing bravery. But she's really smart about doing it. She doesn't really take a lot of reckless tackles, a lot of reckless challenges. She shows her maturity in that essence that she can play really well depending on who the opponent is. Of course, listen, we haven't seen that much of her, but through what we've seen, I really like what we've seen from her. So that's my biggest question, I think. What do you do with the back line? And I think that goes to say, depends on who your opponent is. There might be an opportunity if you, and no disrespect to who the opponent may be, but if it's a bit of a lesser opponent, you could stick three in the back and just go, you know, Vanessa Gilles, Kadisha Buchanan, and Shalina Zdorsky, and then you can move everybody else up the pitch. And that to me that's where the question mark comes with Ashley Lawrence, because I think as we saw the past two games here in the UK, she's so good in the middle. She's just such a almost hybrid player that can play so well in every third on the pitch. So I think that's my question mark. But in goal, if Caitlin Sheridan hadn't been injured, I'd say, yeah, she's the next starter of this team. But Steph LeBay has done everything that you have asked of her to do. And she was probably ready to take a back seat and realize that she may not be the starter on this team going into the Olympics. But with Caitlin's injury and the uncertainty with her future, hopefully she will be ready for the Olympics. But I think this is Steph LeBay's team.
Well, we shall see what happens. Still a lot of, I suppose, unanswered questions lineup-wise, but it's a great problem to have if you are a coach, that is for sure. And I think both John Herman and Bev Priestman are experiencing that with both the men and the women respectively. So we'll see what happens going forward here in what's going to be a very busy summer. Sandra, thank you again for joining us. Listeners, you can follow her on Twitter at @sprucina if you want more info about the Canadian women's national team, Canadian soccer, and just sports in general as well. So Sandra, once again, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, guys. And thanks for your podcast. I've actually enjoyed listening to it the last little while. It's really nice to hear both of your voices. I've known Thomas for a little bit. And then Peter, I've seen some of your work, obviously, on Sportsnet because I work for Rogers as well. But it's very cool to see you guys combining for this. So thanks for including me. I really appreciate it.
Will do it for us this week. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Again, please subscribe and rate us wherever you get your podcasts. And we will chat with you next week on the Northern Football Podcast.